sales going around Dublin in urban areas. What do you read from this?
Similar to the thing with TG Carr, it's almost like a quiet or a silent revolution. It's been done purely for the sake of the love of the language and not because of any legal thing coming from the state. So that's what I'd read about it. People doing it for the love of the language or for the need to express themselves through a different medium rather than English or French or Spanish or anything like that.
Now, Donica, this is the issue again. It's coming back to, is the language beginning to be appreciated as one of the few things in a world of increasing sameness that makes this country different?
Well, I think it can be exaggerated that as well. There can be an over sentimentalization of the language. I mean, language is just an aspect of living, and you either speak it or you don't. And when you speak it, you should be facilitated to speak it, and you find out context to speak it. So I think it's great that it is sort of burgeoning again. But I think if you don't speak Irish, I don't think you should feel in any way diminished. I mean, it's part of the complex sort of cultural history that we've been thrown into over the last 500 years. And the last thing I would want is you know, people to be sort of emotionally forced into learning Irish. I mean, I think to be an Irish citizen is a highly complex thing, and there's lots of layers to it, and it doesn't depend on speaking Irish.
But Colin, let's talk about speaking Irish, but also let's talk about working. I mean, you've made music, you've also written novels in Irish, you've worked through Irish, you've lived through Irish all your life.
Yeah.
I mean, do you in some way feel that that accesses a different heritage?
I don't know for certain. I know I was lucky in that my parents were mad enough to decide to speak Irish when they got married. For whatever reason, I don't know. They didn't come from Irish-speaking backgrounds. And it's something that I've been given. It's a gift I've been given, for want of a better word. It's something I haven't carried as an agenda. I suppose I've given it, so I do it. It means that, you know, whatever I write doesn't make a lot of money or doesn't maybe travel that far, but that doesn't matter really, you know.
Pat Butler, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Pat, can I ask you again about the idea of trying to access something different? Eamon O'Keefe was on yesterday. Now, maybe this is a politician speaking, a politician agenda, but he was saying that as far as he was concerned, that unless we can talk about the progression of the language, etc., and how we get there, but as far as he was concerned, that this was something not only to preserve, but something that accessed a different heritage. Now, just Donica O'Brien said, well, hold on a second, you can't, O'Brien says, you can't be going down those roads because that is kind of discriminating against a variety of other people. But do you think that O'Keefe had something in what he was saying?
I think there's no doubt he has something in what he was saying. I didn't hear yesterday's programme, but getting the drift of what you put there very clearly to me. Well, I mean, you can't deny, I don't think even Donegal would deny, that access to the Irish language does give you, whether you like it or whether you don't, it gives you access to 5,000 years of a continuum of thought and thought processes. And language is such a complex thing. It's not just a form of expressing of identity. It's also a psychology. And if one is to compare, let's say, the sort of Gaelic thinking pattern to a German thinking pattern to perhaps an English one, then you've got quite different cultural expressions. And therefore, one must accept that if that continuum of thought is there and if one has access to that language, well, then, of course, one has access to it. It doesn't make you better. It just makes you probably in a position to understand a little better in the world as to where an awful lot of who we are and where we are came from. And that is far, far from sentimentality.
Well, Pat, can I ask you about, let's say, many people who would say that one of the reasons that the language was so foremost, let's say the Gaelic Liga and what have you, was that certain people had a view that being really Irish was like some sort of ersatz Aran Islands, a sense that you would have to, there was something that was totally unique, let's say in South Connemara and in the Aran Islands, that wasn't shared by the rest of us, and as a result that was a vision of Ireland that was embedded with the language, and it's only now that the language has become liberated from that.
That's true, and not only, and in a way it's not so much that they had something that we didn't have. Maybe they had something that we once lost. Consequently, I think there's this sense of rediscovery. Yes, you're quite right. There was the doctrinaire position. There was the notion that somehow that the state, and correctly, I think, had to facilitate the survival of a language by all sorts of structures, be they politically motivated or otherwise. And it does mean that now there is a sort of a backlash in one sense. People who feel as if Irish has been some sort of threat to them. And maybe a lot of that is justified. On the other hand, I also find it extremely curious when and people say to me, Irish was beaten into me in school, Irish was the... And I often ask the question, what about German? What about history? What about mathematics? Was that not beaten in as well? And religion? And then there's a pause. But why is it only the beating in of the Irish that presents the problem?
Well, no, I think it's very important to remember that, I mean, people say that the state was instrumental in trying to foist Irish on people. I think if you look at the record of the Irish state since independence, it has reneged on its obligations to provide the facility for people to use Irish language in society.
Correct.
And the triumphs, if you like, of the Irish language movement have come about through grassroots organisation, be it Radio na Gaeltachta or TG Carr, have come about through the grassroots. And even the language bill that just passed through the Senate recently, I mean, it, from my reading of it, the government were clearly trying to lessen both the official status of the Irish language and the ability of people to do it. And it was only because again, grassroots groups pushed for full sort of implementation of their rights that it seems to have struck a balance again. And let's hope that that bill goes through the Dáil and people get the not just the formal right, but the ability to see their rights fulfilled.
Well, let's talk about the living language column, because many people would say that Gaelic column, and I think you put your finger on it, was something that this is coming up from some sort of organic level, that people are saying, hold on a second, now whether it's about some big sociological deal, define ourselves by X, Y, Z, or maybe it's just many people saying, hold on a second, I would like teachers who are much more committed to something, and we get the impression that teachers teaching through Irish have got a much greater commitment to education, to the language, to culture. What do you ascribe to this? Because it is certain something that's blossoming, because when we were kids there was Skull or Coin, and as far as I could see, no other primary school in our neck of the woods that ever was ever went through Irish.
Yeah, again, it's a funny thing. Years ago, when the language started disappearing, it was a decision that families made, women within the family decided that the language was useless because it wasn't going to help kids economically, so they were being geared for emigration perhaps. So maybe Irish people are a lot happier in themselves now and they're willing to say, well, actually, I'm into the Irish language and I wouldn't mind my son or my daughter or my family to be given the chance to speak it, that's all. Because it's just a means of communication. You know, as Pat said, it is, you do get access into 5,000 years of a continuum in that way, and it's only by default that you discover that when you get older and all of a sudden you understand a place name or you understand, you know, a cove, a name of a cove, and then you realise, God, how do I do that? Whereas if you look at the English name of it, it actually doesn't mean anything at all.
But I think it's also part of it.
Well, let's focus in on the idea of the names that come, because I've always found that fascinating. I got married in a place called Roundstone, which was Cluckin Roan, which was Seal's Rock. But when the English guys came in, they obviously said Roan, Round, Stone, Round, in they go. No sense of a place. And again, if you go onto one of the beaches around someone, that's what you see. You see loads and loads of seals. And this is the sort of interesting, but focus on the place name thing, because I find that really fascinating, Colm.
Well, as you said, Roundstone, Cluckin Roan, it's amazing. All around, like there's New Inn, there's Newtown Forbes, all kinds of names. And I only remember the English ones, and I keep looking when I'm travelling around the country, I keep looking to check out the Irish ones, because a lot of them I wouldn't understand, or I wouldn't know the history behind it. We were in Moat recently, and there was a name called, on an art centre called Tour Ard, and I was thinking, Tour, they've spelled Tour as in Tower, T-U for the Ard, they've spelled it T-U-A-R, they've got it wrong, does it mean Tour as in... Anyway, I asked anyway essentially what it meant, and it meant that people used to bleach their clothes on the mountain in behind, and Tour was the bleaching.
And that's Tour was the bleaching?
Yeah, the bleaching of
the
clothes.
So bleaching on high, basically.
That's on the high ground. That's essentially what I meant.
There's a lot of that going on, bleaching on high, isn't there? Yeah.
Go on, Pat, go on.
There's a lot of that going on, bleaching on high, in all. But you're quite right about place names. And what I found extraordinary, I spent some time on Rathlin, doing a small film there a couple of years ago.
Isn't it one of the strangest islands in the world?
It is extraordinary.
I spent a couple of days there as well. I thought it was a very bizarre place.
It is quite amazing. And there's no way that you can understand that island better than realising there is one bar. So the power of the man who owns that bar is almost absolute.
Does it still have the pool table?
Oh, they still have, at which I must say I didn't distinguish myself. Having said that, I had a wonderful conversation, and many, many conversations, and some of them late into the evening, with the very same barman, who is, I think, of a Presbyterian he found it interesting that he could ask me questions about place names on Rathlin that he wasn't quite sure. He knew there was some meaning to it. And what I found interesting was pointing out to him that, in fact, that is a commonly shared Scots Gaelic and indeed Irish Gaelic name, and that it means whatever it means. And we had some great fun with that, and as we often speculated looking at each other across an early morning pint at about 2 a.m, you know, that it's nice to look into the other man's garden now and again.
Pat Butler, Donica O'Brien and Colm O'Snoody, thank you all for talking to me this morning. Now we've got a track going to play from Glonig May, which is the new album from Keela, which is out on Friday, is it coming?
Friday.
Dublin Life with Carol Moran and Owen Sweeney, your guide to getting the best out of living and working in the city. Have your say.